The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode contains language and content of an explicit nature. Listener discretion is advised. Before a song is released, a record is produced, or a chorus is written, the musicians that write them think a lot. They live a lot, and they feel a lot. Before the chorus dives into the stories and experiences that shape these artists, and ultimately, the music we hear. I'm your host, Sophia Lopercaro, and this episode's guest is Jaws of Love. Jaws of Love is the solo project of Kelsey Ayer, one of the founding members of Local Natives. His new record, Second Life, explores big existential questions by way of small, everyday moments. It's about moving through life's phases, even when change is scary and outcomes are uncertain. Starting very high level, essentially, there are three songs on this record that have years, well, numerical years in the title. So you have 1,000 mm-hmm. years, 5 years, and 10 or 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
The concept kind of came because all the songs either have the same chord progression or like derived from like a similar chord progression. I always meant for the songs that became 5 years, 100 years, and 1,000 years to be like a 3-song suite. That was like the concept behind it. And because 5 years and 1,000 years have the same chord progression, but like I ended up figuring out a different melody for 1,000 years, and I ended up having 100 years be, I'm just saying like years so much. Like, so
I mean, you wrote the album.
I know. Right. This is my fault. It's my own fault. So 5 years, I loved how 5 years went into 100 years, and I wanted to make like a seamless double song. And I just kind of came upon these like analogies that based on time that kind of represented how I felt about like this kind of journey, with like 5 years being about trying to have a conversation with an old friend that you've like lost touch with so long ago because of something traumatic that happened, and you're trying to build up the courage to talk to that person. And then 100 years talking about how 100 years ago it was so hard for people to have the simplest forms of communication because of how separate everyone was, and now we're so overly connected that there should be no excuse to try and like just reach out to someone to talk to them again. And and then for 1,000 years over the pandemic, it dawned, or I was like reading some random like tidbit about 1,000 years ago, the average lifespan of a person was 35 years. And I learned this in the middle of the pandemic, working on this new record, trying to have a kid. It's not working out. Our whole lives are all like kind of turned upside down, and I'm 35. And so like all these, that kind of led to me thinking of, oh, is this like next era? Is this like my second life? And that's why I kind of framed the album around that idea of like, you know, I'm trying to become a father. I'm thinking about my parents before me, and I'm like trying to start this new thing. So that's, it all kind of, I guess, like fits together to me.
It does. No, I mean, we're going to, again, get into this in even more detail as we go, but the through line really is this concept of second life, but kind of plays on that mm-hmm. concept, either in mm-hmm. the very literal sense of, you know, not actual reincarnation, but like life cycles and things changing, a second child, a second chance at reconnecting with a person mm-hmm. from your past, Yeah, it is really interesting, and it's cool also hearing you explain 1,000 years, because that one in Angelica, I think they're probably lyrically some of the most abstract songs on the record, mm-hmm. and definitely the ones that feel like super like kind of metaphysical and existential. And so 1,000 years was definitely the one that stumped me the most. So that makes it make so much more sense.
Oh, cool.
I guess similarly, because, you know, the first two songs sort of, again, exist in that sort of existential space. Angelica is kind of, I don't know, it's like the kind of the fragility of life, I guess. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're good or bad, like, who lives for a certain amount of time, who dies at a certain time in life. Mm. It's all sort of, you know, like, I guess the way that life or fate or whatever you believe chooses that is kind of fickle and arbitrary,
right?
If you will.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I love that take on it.
Yeah.
I love just, I know I come from a certain viewpoint on whatever songs that I write, but I also love when people just have their own interpretations and apply it to their lives how they want. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's such a, songs can be such a useful, like, emotional tool in that way.
Yeah. So given, I mean, I've kind of showed my take, what was your sort of original idea with that song? And
Angelica?
Yeah.
Angelica was kind of written, I guess, in a way of, it's definitely not a traditional pop structure for a song. And it was kind of a sonic experiment for me. That was one of the first things I wrote during quarantine. Because I wrote and produced a lot of the record by myself, just holed away in my studio. And then when I hit up Danny Reich, who had his studio in Lockhart, Texas. You been to Lockhart?
No.
Oh, okay. But you just spent a bunch of time in Austin?
I was living in Dallas. So you were not in even Dallas. The cool one.
Okay,
nobody gotcha. From Dallas get mad at me, but okay. I stand by my opinion.
Well, so yeah, I went out to Lockhart to work with Danny for like a week. That was the first time that the record really kind of took its form. But Angelica was more of like, I love this chord progression. I just want to hear it like over and over again. And then I had this kind of mantra-ish thing. And then I took that was in English and I turned it into Spanish. I had Mark Nieto's, that's Combat. His girlfriend is from Peru. So I had expert help because I'm not fluent in Spanish.
You didn't just Google translate it.
No, I didn't. I got some expert opinions and expert translation because I wanted it to be right. I guess, self-conscious in a way of like, I don't want to disrespect Spanish speaking people. I'm a mixed race person. My mom's from Colombia. My dad's white. And while I'm pretty at peace with the fact that like, I'm never going to be Colombian enough or Spanish speaking enough to be like truly a part of that culture 100%. I think lots of mixed race people just know life as like you're like in between, or you're like you're not ever going to be the perfect definition of anything. You're just a unique, you know, vessel for whatever is the mix of the beautiful, cool mix that you are. So I'm good with that. I'm cool with that. I still love to learn how to speak fluent Spanish, but I know some, and I felt like, okay, well, I do want to connect a bit more to my Colombian roots, and that felt like a cool way to do that, or a natural way for me to do that. I've never sung anything in Spanish before. But the phrase is, when waking up, I only know it in Spanish.
Something about
now.
An eye twitching.
No.
I Googled this and I forgot to write it down.
Oh, really? Okay.
I Googled translate.
Oh, I wonder what that says. So I tried to translate, when waking up, there may be a slight ringing in your ears.
Oh, yeah. Not a twitch, ringing in your mm-hmm. ears. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. And Angelica, it's kind of like, me having a conversation with a fictional person about how change is just really hard, and change is just really difficult and uncomfortable at first, but like everything, you just get used to it, and then things are better than they were. Hopefully that's how the direction for what change is in your life, ideally.
Yeah.
it's a good, mostly a good changes.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one definitely gets out there, and I'm so pumped on a lot of the production stuff and sounds that I, really weird sounds I got in my studio, that it was just like experimenting with different things and different like voice pitched up stuff. There's like a Titanic, I call them Titanic flutes. You know,
oh,
the,
God.
You know, the, so I always think of that when I think of this one sound that kind of comes in through the song, and then there's this like this cool fucked up delay thing at the end that's like my favorite sound on the album.
Yeah.
I love this thing so much, and I'm slightly paranoid that it's too low in the mix, but I think that it's fine.
Sometimes things need to be a bit low in the mix just to add that little bit of sound.
Yeah.
Also, I can't hear that My Heart Will Go On flute without immediately thinking there's a viral video that's kind of recycled from time to time. I'm guessing a kid, it's mostly the audio that's viral, of someone playing it on a recorder, but playing it as horribly as humanly possible. Yeah. And it's the best video ever. It's like, nee, 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 nee.
Oh, great. That sounds so good.
I'll have to send it to you. It's spectacularly bad.
Wonderful. I want to hear it.
That's the best kind of thing, though. We love things that sound like a mess. But going back to something you were saying before about this, like, you know, change, hopefully pointing towards a good thing, you know, the final line of this song is, but the future's brightness always starts from there. So I think what you said kind of explains that a little more now. Like, it's still ending on a hopeful note, despite some of the more like kind of macabre imagery that exists in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that that's a takeaway for sure.
Yeah. It's nice to see again, almost don't know where I'm going with this. I kind of do. Like, I mean, we all talk about like difficult, heavy topics in our music. It's important and crucial to do so, but it's nice to see that people aren't like sort of waiting in and romanticizing like the sad stuff the way that I feel like people have in the past. Like, I feel like that's changing a lot in music. Like, it's not about, again, romanticizing something macabre. It's sort of like trying to unpack it and grapple with it. But not be like, oh, I'm so sad, I'm a sad artist, and I'm just sad all the time.
Okay. You know? yeah, like you're saying, in the past it used to be something that was like to aspire to be like like a struggling like insane like artist who's just really damaged and fucked up, and
and again, it creates this whole like lore around it that I just don't think is fair even to artists themselves, because it just forces you to stay in this kind of trap space. Whereas, like, again, this song, and I think this record as a whole, is just asking questions, trying to grapple with the weird, heavy stuff that happens in life, and being like, okay, well, where do we go from here, and how do we keep growing and keep changing and keep being okay?
Yeah. I would love for people to take that away from this album. That sounds so great.
Yeah, well, I did so far.
Great.
So that's my take. We talked a little bit about 5 years and 100 years, and this, again, second life in the sense of a second chance. There's a third song that sort of touches on this, which is Rachel Takes a Bath. At least that's the sense that I got. Again, asking, like, should I reach out to this person? Will I ever have the guts to do it? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love records with recurring themes, and I was trying to do that with this one. And Rachel Takes a Bath, it was just, there was a, I had this chord progression, and then I this phrase, just Rachel Takes a Bath, came out. And I try not to make it awkward, because Mel and I have a bunch of friends named Rachel. It's like best friends named Rachel.
Cool.
There's like three of them. And I kept telling them, like, I swear, like, this is not about any of you. You know, apologies if this makes things weird for you.
It's a two syllable name. It fits in a melody.
Yeah.
It's serving a purpose. Okay.
For sure. And it, you know, it's a, it became this fictional story of a woman who's like taking a bath, trying to relax and trying to, and then kind of like contemplating her whole life, like just through one like kind of night by herself, and using bath salts as an analogy. I was having a lot of fun like researching things for this record and trying to come up with material to write about. And I learned that like 120,000 years ago, it's just like years all over this fucking album. I don't know what's going on, but 120,000 years ago, the Dead Sea totally dried up and everyone was like, it's over. I don't know what everyone said, like in the Bible times, like they're talking about it. I don't know.
you don't have the transcript.
Right. We don't know. We don't know what they're saying. But I think that the Dead Sea was like nothing for a while and then like rebuilt itself. Like I think it's like stuff kind of, it somehow water came back. I don't know how that happened, but I was just thinking like if you had like a can of bath salts and you saw that it was from the Dead Sea and so she's wondering if this was the bath salt second life right now, being in her bath, like hanging out with her. And I just kind of, she starts kind of thinking of, you know, if she could start over. And I love like songs where you're really contemplating like if you could start again and start over. And because I feel like everyone is always like at that spot multiple times in their life where they're like, oh, it would be great to restart.
Yeah. I mean, we're human. Asking these kind of questions is annoyingly normal.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
We go back through the things that we got wrong or that life itself just kind of made wrong for us in some way.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was interesting too, because again, even though it's this concept of, you know, a lost connection with a friend, it again goes into back into that big existential question, especially on 5 years and 100 years. One sort of looks more towards the past. And again, like you mentioned before, like once upon a time, people didn't have the technology. Mm-hmm. And like, if they could see us now, they'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Right,
you
know, totally.
Like,
yeah.
It's like I wrote that on the line and I'm going to find where I wrote it because I write in really small font. Oh yeah. It was the days, the weeks, the months, the years to say hello or goodbye, much less to apologize, how many died in the crossing. Mm. I really like that record, or not that record, that lyric, because it just, again, it showed the weight of, you know, to be able to do anything at the time. You know, I feel like also like half the great like adventure stories or love stories from eras of the past were based around stuff like that. It's like trying to get to someone who was far away because that was just normal.
Totally. You know? Yeah. Oh, that's, I'm glad you liked that line. Awesome. Yeah. I was pumped on that line.
It's pretty good one.
Ah, cool.
You did a good job.
Oh, great.
But yeah, like again, whereas that one looks backwards, I think 5 years kind of looks forwards in the, again, similarly existential way of like, you know, like if the, you know, the big one, the big earthquake, mm-hmm, we live in LA, don't happen. I just moved here.
Right.
You know, like if that were to happen and we were all to go kaput, like would you regret that you hadn't connected with this person? It's the, again, the age old question of if you were to look back on your life and see all the decisions you made, would you be happy with them, essentially?
Yeah, totally.
Mm. So just kind of unpacking it from multiple angles, essentially,
mm-hmm,
which is a good thing. I think now's a good time to go through some of the outliers slash songs that I couldn't quite put my finger on and just want to learn more about. So with that, tell me about Staple Gun.
Well, that's like super like a wild, just like I feel like there's so many newer artists now that are so, they don't really care about genre and they're not trying to make everything sound the same and they're just like having fun with their, how they're expressing themselves. And I really wanted to do that with this record. I know it's still like within certain parameters of like chillness or certain parameters of like emotion, but Staple Gun was this really fun experiment to really let loose and go wild in the studio. And that was a total like me and Danny and Combat experiment that just, we morphed into this really weird sculpture of a song. that it is maybe like the hardest to explain.
We like that sometimes, though. Like, it's, yeah. I love a good, weird experimental moment. It almost feels like a quasi-interlude on the record. It's got some lyrics, but the lyrics don't take very much up within the song. Right. It's, like, almost industrial at times. Like, it's just, again, it's just, like, wonderfully weird.
I really got into this artist, this Italian artist named Io Sono un Cane. I don't know if I'm saying that right. That's why
Io Sono un Cane, as in, like, I am a dog?
Maybe. Is that what that means? Do you speak Italian?
A little bit. Oh, I am Italian.
Oh, shit. Oh, right. Okay, cool. well, he just put out a record. He put out a record last year called IRA. And it's this really, like, long, super dark, fucked up tones, emotional record that's all in Italian. But it sounds like... I'm going to say this soundtrack producer dude. Ennio Morricone.
You said it correctly.
Okay, great.
You're doing a very good job with the Italian.
Yeah, perfect. And yeah, it's very soundscapey, but it's very dark and cold and like dismal. And I really got into that record, and I feel like I owe Staple Gun specifically to him, because there was like a bunch of like dark moments over the electronic drums and stuff that I was super inspired by him to do.
Before we get to, I think, the sort of like biggest theme of this record, I want to take a stop by Guard and Prisoner. This one actually is another one that stumped me, because it is very like abstract in a very beautiful way, but my kind of analysis brain got a little stumped. And of course, it's also the only collaboration on the record with Omotola, who is fantastic. So,
thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I got to see her perform with you at one of the Human Soup events, which was very cool.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah, she's got an awesome voice too. But yeah, so I guess tell me a little bit about that one and its place on the record, especially sitting with all of the other songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so that song was written kind of about depression, how it can kind of have its hold on you even if everything's going well in your life, like it can still like get you. And the idea of like sky is guard and sun is prisoner, like the idea of like you feeling like you, all the negatives, not negative as in negative or positive, but like you just have, you're like free, but in your mind you're captured, you're in a prison of some sort of your own making, because like I feel like depression does that to you, where you even the greatest things that are happening, you can spin into something, them being horrible, it's this thing I think everyone can relate with, that even, yeah, you're only as strong as your own perspective on something. So that I was like in a kind of lonely spot. I was on a writing trip actually with local natives at the time. This was a song that I tried to get on Violet Street.
Wait, is this
our fourth record for
Local
Natives?
Was this when you guys were in France? Because I remember talking about that last time.
We were in Mexico for like a month working on stuff. And most people love tropical places. And I'm allergic to bug bites and mosquito bites and stuff. And they eat me alive. So I was just holing away in this like one room. While everyone else was at the beach, like enjoying the sun and stuff, and I was just kind of like watching The Killing on Netflix, and just like having like coronitas. There's like mini coronas.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Just by myself, and it's just a very lonely time that I wasn't very happy. And it's this thing where you're literally in paradise, and you can't find joy and. It was a interesting spot to be in, and this song kind of came together. And it actually, Ryan and Taylor helped with the song. Taylor helped with some melody stuff, and Ryan helped with some lyrics. So they have a co-writing credit on this. I loved the song. It didn't work out for Local Natives, and I totally turned it around with Danny because it was like a completely different vibe before. But I'm so glad I got to resurrect this one. I'm really glad that this new Jaws of Love record, 90% of it is all songs written and intended for Jaws of Love. And I really needed that purposeful direction for the songs, and to really feel like this record kind of ascended into like what I want Jaws of Love to be. Because the first record was like half Local Native reject songs, half other little bits that I had in my pocket. This song is the only song that was from Local Natives that didn't work out. But yeah, that's basically everything about that one.
Yeah. And I mean, it's important to have something that's yours as well. Like, I mean, it's very clear to me that you have, very understandably, like, so much love and respect for everything that you do with Local Natives. Like, mm-hmm. it rings, I mean, even when I've seen you perform, you're always, like, very happy to reference it. But simultaneously, while it's wonderful to be part of something collective and bigger than you, it's also nice to simultaneously have something that is really truly yours and is retrofitted to you as an individual artist too.
Yeah,
like it's cool that you get to have both experiences.
Yeah, it seems the older I get, the more I really want to grow in different ways as an artist. And within the structure of Local Natives, it's just hard to do that. Cause you're linked to the other members, and the common goal is to ascend as a group. And so it makes it a little bit challenging to ascend like kind of on your own. So I needed, years ago, I realized I needed to have Jaws of Love to express myself and have this other branch growing off of this tree, of my songwriting tree.
Your songwriting tree.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's the songwriting tree. I feel like there's now like some weird comedy branches starting to poke out as well
they
in their
are.
Own ways.
Yeah.
You used to have the podcast. There's Human Soup for a bit. Mm-hmm. I've got to see your sketch routines, which yeah. are wonderfully absurd in
oh,
all the best
you.
Ways. So you've definitely in multiple ways carved out some space for yourself and allowed yourself to be more than one thing, which is healthy and good.
Yeah, thanks. I'm super stoked that it was a lot of quarantine, the pandemic, that allowed me to spend time on these other things that I wouldn't have ever, I don't think, spent time on if the world was just on the course that it was for so long. So I don't know. It really has taught me to be open with life and just open with being open to whatever gets thrown at you to figure out or just appreciate what's going on and appreciate new opportunities.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy with the work output that's been like the last few years. But especially really, really excited about this new Jaws of Love record, because I've always wanted it to have the time, the same time and respect and the same, like, all these things afforded to Local Natives albums, where we take our time, we really dive so deep into these records to try to get them to ascend to the level we want them to. And for the first time for Jaws of Love, I feel like I've been able to personally do that with this new record.
Yeah. Well, it shows. It's a really rich record. And I
Thank
really
you.
Just enjoyed kind of getting to sit in the soundscapes of it. I've also just been having like a very stressful few weeks. So it's been nice to kind of have something to just, again, just sort of sit in and feel like that, not spaced out, because it's still something you want to engage with, because there's a lot of obviously really strong narratives, but again, it's just a very soothing kind of soundscape to cool. be
yeah.
to get to live in for a bit. Well, I like some of the stuff that you were just saying about, you know, learning to let, I guess, whatever happens in life come your way, or at least, you know, as best as any of us can be flexible with what's coming. Because mm-hmm. I think the next three songs that we're going to discuss, I mean, in some in heavier senses and some in lighter senses, sort of deal with that. One, of course, which I think is kind of probably one of, if not the most important song on this record, which is Rainbow Baby. Mm-hmm. Starting before we get into, again, the direct, like, story behind it, one thing I thought that was really interesting is, you know, especially we talked about the more abstract songs on this record, this is probably the one that lyrically is the most literal and the most transparent, but simultaneously, the first about two-thirds of the song are done with a vocoder,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a really interesting contrast. So can you kind of talk to me a little bit about that and, like, the kind of motivation behind that?
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited to manipulate my voice in different ways on this record. And there is kind of a flip of the coin with this song and the story. And it just kind of worked out that, like, we were trying to have the song live in this, like, synthy vocoder robot world, which, like, based in, like, the future or something, future leaning something. And then, you know, when the story takes a turn and I learn that I lose the baby, because if you haven't heard it, Rainbow Baby is about my wife and our first failed pregnancy. So we had two pregnancy losses over the pandemic. But once I kind of, like, learn that it wasn't going to work out, then it kind of reality sets in, and most of the synths, robot voice, all this stuff goes away, and it's just kind of like in the present, in the cold present moment or something. But I mean, I really enjoy, like, if you can do something in its simplest form, and to just have that little switch and divide the song into these two places just felt good to me to do. But yeah, I wanted the two halves to feel different. So in my quest for voice manipulation, it just kind of came out to use a vocoder, and it's like a vocoder and, like, other layered, like, tuned vocals, and it's just kind of this, like, amalgamation of different things that I'd never done before, which I was really stoked on from a production level.
Yeah, I also remember, well, if I remember correctly, as it kind of switches from the section with the more, again, layered vocals and vocoder to the section where it's really just your voice, it almost kind of fades away rather than being like a switch, if mm-hmm. I remember right, mm-hmm. which I thought was cool. Like, even though it would also be very interesting to have, like, in a kind of an abrupt change, mm. it's almost like the effects kind of melting away, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
From, like, a technical perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that, again, like, Danny really helped me bring that to life. I mean, this whole record, I'm super indebted to. He's such a talented engineer and mixer and producer, and so he really helped me elevate the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we made that all in Lockhart. A lot of the other songs we worked on later, but that one really came together, like, so quickly, because I think the chord progression is just moving so much that it doesn't need a ton of other accompaniment, and we just had some really fun, like little, not mistakes, but little, like, unexpected lines that kind of came through as we were working on it that day. And yeah, just that one came together kind of the quickest, because I just had that one written and, like, ready to go. Like, some songs come in all sorts of different forms to the studio usually, so and then some songs, you know, have all lyrics and all melodies written, and some songs are like one idea you experiment with in the studio, but Rainbow Baby was like ready to go, and so that made it really come together really quickly.
Yeah. Well, continuing from there, I thought it was really interesting that Tarot Cards comes directly after it, because as we do with tarot cards, you know, it's about reading the future. It's, you know, these ideas of being afraid of what cards are going to come next. You know, you're afraid to get the Death card. I'm personally very terrified of the Tower card. They're all like cards that signify change, but we often see as just signifying bad, you know? And I think, you know, after any of us go through something difficult and we're kind of in that like limbo period of like before we kind of get to what's next, it is kind of a weird place to be in, like to kind of grapple with, okay, how am I going to move on? And I'm scared of what's next. And it kind of felt interesting that that song was where it was in the record.
I never considered that, but I should just agree with you and say, yeah, I'm a genius and I'm so good at placing songs in the right order.
I mean, hey, I wouldn't put it past you. You know what you're doing. You've been in the game for a minute.
I have been in the game, but it's funny because I never thought of it like that. But that makes so much sense, and that's so wonderful that, like, I don't know. You work on records for so long, and you're trying to come from a perspective, and you're working as hard as you can to imbue the song with a message that you want to put out into the world. But no matter what, the listener is going to take away what they want to. And so often the listener like fills in things for you, or the listener like pushes the album even like further. And that's so like cool that I am stoked that that song is after Rainbow Baby, because that does make so much sense. And I was so scared like after that happened, and it just, that song kind of came from, I had this melody I really loved, and then I don't know, Mel and I, she's always talking about not tarot cards specifically, but like astrology. And I don't know, we got to this topic of like, I have no idea what, there's, tarot cards are such a mystery to me. And the idea that the Grim Reaper can be on a card and it can be a good thing is like such a mind fuck.
Yeah. a little
so,
bit.
Yeah. So I kind of ran with that idea. But yeah, that's great. I feel like that one worked out. And actually, that has another feature from one of my best friends growing up. His name's Adam Olivieri, and he does some like harmonies with me on that song. And then Mark Combat does stuff on that song too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I think I remember this from the last episode that I spoke with you, which was when we were talking about the Sour Lemon EP, but the reason I remember this is because it's something that's come up again and again in other episodes with other artists, which was this idea of, I think, what I called like a subconscious concept album, where it's just like, I mean, we've obviously talked about this at length so far. Like, it's a lot of the themes in here are very intentionally placed. Like, again, years that you put in this record, quite a lot, you know? But I think even within that, there's also like the mix of the things that were consciously added, subconsciously added, the things that, you know, the audience then kind of fills in their own interpretations with later. But, you know, it's interesting how things that you wouldn't expect to sort of tie in end up tying in. And also, again, for whatever parts of this may have been subconscious versus coming from other people's interpretations, like, you know, when you write something during a certain period of time of your life, it's very normal that whatever themes are happening in your life are going to come through the music you make in some capacity.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think we love to imbue meaning with like anything that we can, and not to say that meaning is valuable, but like the world is just this like chaos of like all these atoms mashing together, and we, I think, just love to try and make sense of that any way we can. And so to have something like an album where you're putting up so much like imagery against like these chords and melodies and music, and you're like, it's like a firework display of all this like all these ideas and all these like maybe like analogies and metaphors and things that could like click into something that clicks into another thing. And that's what's just so fun with an album, because you're throwing it out all on the listener, and then it's like all these puzzle pieces or like maybe like Legos, like you're throwing all these Legos and then like someone can just like create anything that they want.
Yeah,
all these like beautiful Lego pieces, you know, and they can just like, they can be anything, and it's so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's I think it's one of the most magical parts of music is, again, that symbiotic relationship and how, mm-hmm. again, meanings grow and evolve as they get passed from the creator to the listener and just all of it. Well, the last thing I want to touch on is the closing song, which directly kind of ties back to Rainbow Baby. And that mm-hmm. song, of course, is The Heist. And, you know, I guess the idea of, you know, during pregnancy, and I can kind of, like, I've seen this from a distance in that, like, I have other people amongst, like, family and friends who've also experienced pregnancy loss. And I know, like, you're kind of, you get to that point where if it's happened before and you're expecting again, you're kind of counting the weeks, like, to where you get to a certain threshold point.
Totally, yeah.
And this song seems to sort of deal with that, mm-hmm. that point. And it's like, not only are we going to make it this time, but this... I don't know, there's a lot of grappling with like fate and like if it's made to work out or if we're somehow like tricking the system or something.
Right, yeah. I mean, you're just, I think at that point you are like you were in a spot where you never thought it would happen to you, and then it does. And then we're pregnant again, and then we're like, okay, well how far, like when can we feel at ease? And it was literally like the day before, if we still were pregnant, the following morning, we would have been one day farther than the last pregnancy that failed. And I wrote all the lyrics in that night, literally looking at Melanie, you don't know if it's going to work out, and you are questioning everything constantly. And even right now, we're 29 weeks pregnant and everything is looking great. So that feels awesome. Knock on wood. Wear some wood. There's some wood frame in here probably.
Damn it, that's laminate. This is what here I'll okay, knock on your behalf. You. I'm knocking on your behalf.
Yeah, and everything's feeling good but I really don't feel like until he's like in our arms that we're gonna really feel any sort of like sigh of relief or something. And then I talk to parents that say that once you have a kid, you can never sleep like a peaceful night again. So God damn it. It's all just shit from here, I guess.
All but, downhill from here. The second life is not going to be as fun as the first one.
Yeah. My brother-in-law, they had a baby, he's super, super cool. And he was saying how him and his other father friends just describe it as like, as it gets more challenging, it gets more rewarding, and it just kind of and both things just kind of go up and up and up, and they're just correlated to where they're just like lockstep. And I definitely know that challenging things in my life that work out do feel like so rewarding. So I am looking forward to that.
Second Life is available now wherever you normally get your music. This podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Sophia Lopercaro, and the artwork is by Meg Wilford.
Thank you. Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.